This is VOA News, coming to you by remote. I'm Gene Randall. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani used tough language today aimed at the United Arab Emirates, calling his decision to normalize ties with Israel a huge mistake. In a televised speech, Rouhani warned the Gulf nation against allowing Israel to have a foothold in the region. The UAE-Israel agreement, announced on Thursday, is seen as a strategic boost for the Arab Gulf states' regional and global standing. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo today signed a defense cooperation agreement with Poland. A major part of it, the transfer of American troops to Poland from Germany. Polish President Andrzej Duda said the pact would serve to increase the security of other countries in the neighborhood. Pompeo said, quote, the opportunities are unlimited. President Donald Trump wants some 12,000 troops out of NATO member Germany, often complaining Germany spends too little on its own defense. 1,000 U.S. service personnel will be redeployed to Poland. They'll join 4,500 Americans already based there. As the oil spill off the coast of Mauritius in the Indian Ocean worsens, Japan's Environment Minister Shinjiro Koizumi says Tokyo will send a team to assess the damage. 1,000 tons of oil have leaked out so far just off the Mauritius coast. A Japanese-owned bulk carrier struck a coral reef in late July, triggering a state of environmental emergency. Scientists are calling the country's worst ecological disaster involved in this operation. Removing the ship will be a delicate operation and is likely to take months. France says it will assist with the cleanup. Koizumi also told reporters he saw the spill as a grave crisis that could lead to a loss of biodiversity. Japan today marked the 75th anniversary of its surrender in World War II. Emperor Naruhito used the occasion to express deep remorse over his country's wartime actions. He pledged to reflect on the war's events and voiced the hope such a tragedy would never be repeated. While some people expected an apology from Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, that did not happen. In fact, he gave thanks for the sacrifices of his country's war dead. Via remote, this is VOA News. New outbreaks of the coronavirus are causing unwelcome news for summer vacationers across Europe, as many pandemic restrictions are being reimposed. Light nightclubs are being shut down, face mask requirements are being expanded, even in trendy resort areas. Europe's hardest hit countries, Britain, France, Italy, and Spain between them, have lost more than 141,000 lives to COVID-19. Being blamed for many new flare-ups, clubs, alcohol-fueled street parties, and large family gatherings. Spanish Health Minister Salvador Illa has announced all nightclubs will be closed, and he issued a ban on outdoor smoking in public places where a distance of 2 meters cannot be maintained. Nursing home visits are limited to one person a day for each resident for only 1 hour. Spain has recorded almost 50,000 confirmed COVID cases in the past 2 weeks. Among Italy's anxieties, the pandemic's effects on next weekend's Ferragosto holiday, when millions of people normally celebrate with trips to domestic beaches and mountain areas or go abroad. On the island of Capri, the mayor has broadened a face mask order. Instead of just at night, those coverings are now required for the entire day. Italy yesterday recorded 574 new COVID cases, the largest daily number since late May. In Greece, new limits on restaurants, bars, and nightclubs that operate past midnight have been widened to more of the country, including Athens. On the popular tourist islands of Paros and Antiparos in the Aegean, gatherings of more than 9 people have been prohibited. To this point, Greece has been spared the full wrath of the pandemic, with 6,600 cases at a cost of 223 lives. The global COVID numbers, meanwhile, continue their relentless climb. The case count is nearing 21.2 million, with a death toll of 766,000. Topping the list is the United States, with 5.3 million infections and well over 168,000 fatalities. Latin America is the world's worst hit pandemic region. Its caseload is more than 6 million, and it continues to accelerate, even as many nations begin to relax their lockdowns. The Pan American Health Organization is warning of an increase in other diseases due to the saturation of health services and the suspension of routine vaccination campaigns as a result of the coronavirus. The International Monetary Fund predicts the regional economy will shrink by almost 9.5% this year. Brazil has the most COVID cases in the world after the United States. The country has suffered over 106,000 COVID fatalities. Peru and Chile have the highest caseloads and number of deaths in the world per 100,000 inhabitants. President Trump has ordered ByteDance to defest the U.S. operations of its video sharing app, TikTok, within 90 days. It is the latest effort to ramp up pressure on the Chinese company over concerns about the safety of the personal data it handles. More news online via remote. I'm Gene Randall, and this is VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
And we are proud that we have a team of lawyers who are already looking at the code and seeing a way to cut it down so that there can be more media diversity and independent communication environment.
A Nigerian group condemns a new broadcasting code, saying it undermines the constitutional provision that protects freedom of expression.
And if this is where we are headed to, it will be very, very dangerous, and it leaves much to desire. So I support the claims of those who are saying that the woman or the commissioners that were appointed by this particular administration to leave the state.
The Electoral Commission of Ghana comes under criticism after admitting the registration of non-citizens and minors in the new voter register.
And in there right now is in chaos because of this act of the police. So the police always, they do say that they are doing investigation, they will protect everybody. We haven't seen them protecting us.
And the Tanzanian main opposition party, Chadema, demands an investigation after unknown persons set its zonal office in Arusha on fire, destroying important documents. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Nigeria, the Freedom of Information Council plans to legally challenge a newly revised broadcasting code established by the National Broadcasting Commission on NBC, a state regulator. The group says the broadcasting code undermines freedom of expression as guaranteed by the Constitution. This after NBC used the new code to impose a fine on a Lagos-based radio station for conducting an interview the administration deemed inciting. Critics say it appears the government wants to use the new broadcasting code to clamp down on dissent and prevent opponents of the administration from being interviewed by private and state-run stations. But the Freedom of Information Council sharply rejects the new code, saying it is illegal and an affront to the Constitution. President Aigbokan is the executive director of Freedom of Information Council. He tells me that his team is ready to file a suit to challenge the legality of the new code.
The Nigeria Broadcasting Code has been amended six times since 1993, and the amendment, the current amendment, is actually needful, save for some extraneous extent to which the code has gone, particularly when it comes to content exclusivity, which obviously is also against the Copyright Act. Very importantly, the NBC code for the first time attempted to tame online broadcasting. And for us, online media cannot be regulated by a national law, considering the fact that the broadcasting regulator do not provide or issue broadcasting license or frequency, and therefore cannot be said to be the regulator of online media.
What do you say to those who are of the opinion that the new measures or the new code undermines the constitutional provision which guarantees freedom of speech?
I agree with you that the new NBC codes undermine the freedom of speech online. Don't forget, like I said, the right to freedom of expression applies regardless of frontiers. The withdrawal of a rebroadcasting right in relation to a broadcaster program or the withdrawal of his license or a fine of 5 million naira because the interview conducted was against some legitimate concerns. The right can be said to have been infringed except if the court of law has stated so. So imposition of fine without the court of law pronouncing so is an infringement on the right of freedom of expression online. Again, Peter, don't forget, persons have the right to audience offline and even on site. And if you have any remark or point against such position, you have a right to go to court on civil defamation case. The NBC code seems to use administrative measures to stem a right of expression, which to us is unconstitutional. The right to freedom of expression as guaranteed the Constitution is a fundamental right. And anybody who feels that that right has been violated has an option for ascertainment of his right and ask for damages. So the NBC code itself is even the secondary legislation to the NBC Act. The NBC Act that created it cannot even challenge the Constitution. The Constitution remains supreme, and any provision of the law will violate the Constitution is deemed to be null and void by Section 1, Sub 3 of the Constitution.
The NBC is of the view that the airwaves, or for that matter, people cannot use the media to throw insult about or denigrate people's reputation, and that it undermines Nigeria's societal norms, and that leaders should be respected, among other things. What is your response to that?
It should not just leaders, everyone has the right to be respected. But don't forget, once you get into the political space, for any reason whatsoever, the citizen also have the right to comment on your action, inaction, even up to your privacy. Your privacy limitation is higher than that of a private individual. So any leader who feels that his integrity has been impugned has the right to challenge, say, under a civil defamation litigation process. And the unnecessary administrative measures by the NBC to paddle the executive elites is unconstitutional, it's unreasonable, it's illegal, and as I've stated before, we are working on a process to challenge the constitutionality of such provisions and ask the court to strike it down. States have a positive obligation to promote a free, independent, and diverse communication environment, including media diversity, which is also a key means of addressing propaganda. I would think that Nigeria as a country must establish a clear regulatory framework for broadcasters, which is overseen by a body which is protected against political and commercial inferences or pressure, and which promotes a free, independent, and diverse broadcasting sector.
Are you therefore saying that your organization is going to go to court to legally challenge the NBC code as recently established?
Very well, Peter. We are going to challenge the NBC code as passed. We are going to FYK Council registered as Initiative for Rural Development, Information and Legal Advocacy Center, Irudila. We challenge that provisions. And in the past, we have done so many medial diversity litigations to our credit, and we are proud that we have a team of lawyers who are already looking at the code and seeing a way to cut it down so that there can be more media diversity and independent communication environment.
President Igbokan is the executive director of Freedom of Information Council. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. The Ghanaian Electoral Commission is coming under criticism after admitting that non-citizens and minors were registered during the recent voter registration process. Madam Jean Mensah, chairperson of the electoral body, however, said the organization has implemented measures to clean up the voter list before the upcoming December polls. The Electoral Commission recently concluded one of the phases of the voter registration process, in which a new voter list was compiled to be used for the polls. It had argued the old register was bloated and not credible. Critics say the admission that the new voter register is not clean is a glaring failure and a waste of time and resources. CARE Ghana, a civil society group that advocates for free and fair elections, says the admission that minors and non-citizens were registered is regrettable and a major disappointment. David Kumiado, the executive secretary of CARE Ghana, tells me that the Electoral Commission has failed Ghanaians despite repeated promises to compile a credible voter list for the elections.
After the Electoral Commission submitted the report for the compilation of this new register, we in fact subjected the data the Electoral Commission presented to some forensic analysis. We have a lot of issues with the data the Electoral Commission has submitted. So in this case, what we are saying is the Electoral Commission has prevented 2,232,015 people registering. Not only that, there are also some estimated figures that we believe that the Electoral Commission's preventive measures prevented these people from participating in the registration exercise.
With the latest registration figures and the previous voter list, some are saying that the figures are so different. Others are saying the figures are similar, and that it's a waste of money. What is the position of your organization?
Our position is that the new figures the Electoral Commission has presented as the final figures from the compilation of this register is higher than the previous one. And we believe that the compilation of this voters register is a waste of resources and a waste of time. Because you see, if these over 2 million people were not prevented from registering, we could have been making today 19,337,321, which is far in excess of the whole register the Electoral Commission is saying that is bloated. So there was no need for the compilation of a new voters register call. What the Electoral Commission had to do was a limited registration exercise. So the Electoral Commission can capture all those that are now in and those who didn't get the privilege to register previously when the Electoral Commission was registering.
Some people are of the view that since the Electoral Commission has come out to say that there were minors and some foreigners in this new register, the justification to compile a new register is not justifiable. What is your take on that?
You see, it is very ridiculous for the Electoral Commission to say that. The reason we are saying this is that as part of the source document for this particular registration was the birth certificate. That tells exactly a person's age. That tells exactly the person's nationality. Therefore, if you omit this particular document, you are preventing people from knowing the age of every individual. Now, the Electoral Commission says they are minors. They are minors on this register. What are we going to use to actually confirm or deny the claims of the Electoral Commission? We feel that the reason why the Electoral Commission is saying this is that it has realized that this particular exercise has been rendered useless because of the figures we are recording today. The Electoral Commission projected that it is going to register 15 million people. Now we are registering almost 17 million people, which means the claim by the Electoral Commission was false and very misleading. Realizing that, it is now coming back to want to reduce the numbers on the register so that it will have support for the initial claim it made that the initial voters register is bloated. That is why we are having 17.65 or 645 million on that register. So we do not support that particular claim. It is needless.
Mr. Kumiado, some Ghanaians that I spoke with are of two opinions. Others are saying that the chairperson of the Electoral Commission should resign because she supposedly failed to lead an administration effectively. Some are saying it's a waste of taxpayers' money. Others are saying that this new register that is being compiled will make the upcoming election more credible. What is the stance of your organization?
In fact, Madam Jane Mensah, the Electoral Commissioner, has disappointed a lot of Ghanaians. There have been a lot of errors. There have been a lot of challenges. There have been a lot of problems with this particular administration. The Electoral Commission is leading us to a dangerous place, and it's very, very much important that either they resign or they amend their ways, because this is a country that is a model of democracy. This is a country that is leading the vanguard in the West African sub-region, and Ghana is a gateway to West Africa. And if this is where we are heading to, it will be very, very dangerous, and it leaves much to desire. So I support the claim of those who are saying that the woman or the commissioners that were appointed by this particular administration should leave the state.
David Kumiado is the executive secretary of CARE Ghana. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. The Tanzanian main opposition party Chadema has condemned the destruction of its office in Arusha Thursday. The zonal office in Arusha was firebombed by unknown persons, which led to the destruction of documents and furniture, according to the opposition party. It demands an immediate and thorough investigation into the incident while condemning it as a dastardly act. Chadema says this appears to be part of an attempt to intimidate and harass the group and its supporters in the run-up to the October elections. Tundu Lissu, the party's presidential candidate, was scheduled to visit the office Friday, a day following the attack. In a tweet, the opposition leader says the party and its supporters would not submit to intimidation and terror. For more reaction, I reach John Mrema, Chadema's Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols.
It is very unfortunate that our zonal office, one of our headquarters offices at the Arusha, was firebombed by unknown people. And this incident happened around 2 to 3 p.m. Our security guard who were there were arrested, and until this afternoon, they have not yet been found anywhere. And that office is the office where Tundu Lissu was supposed to be with people of Arusha today so that they can sign his nomination forms as one of the requirements from the National Electoral Commission, that you have to get a minimum of 200 people from 10 regions. So Arusha was one of those regions he was supposed to be today, so that those people, they can sign his nomination forms.
Have officials in Chadema approached the police demanding an immediate and thorough investigation into the destruction of your office?
Yes, since last night, we can say that the police, they were in the scene immediately after they got those news, and the fire department was involved in arresting that fire down. The fire department of Arusha did very well to arrest that fire, although everything in that office has been on fire, from the chairs and even the various documents which were there. But the police have said that they have started immediate investigation, but they haven't issued any immediate public response till the moment. So we are waiting to hear from them as what was the cause of fire or what are they suspecting. But we do suspect that these people are from the other side. They wanted to stop Lissu from getting people in Arusha. This is what we are suspecting.
Some of your supporters are saying this looks like a terror, a plan to intimidate and harass your supporters in the run-up to the election. Is this what the party also suspects?
Yes, this is what we are suspecting, that it's a way of terrorizing us, or a way of intimidating our people, that, okay, if your office can be on fire, so you are not safe. But I'm sure, as we have said, this act has been done by cowardly people. They are now in a state of panic after seeing Tundu Lissu having a lot of supporters countrywide. What we can assure the public is that we are still very strong and we will move on. Nothing can intimidate us. Nothing can terrorize us, because we know this act has been done by cowardly people, and we can't fear cowardly people.
What do you say to those who are expressing concern that attacks on the opposition appears to be surging in the run-up to the October elections, and they fear that there will be more attacks on opposition and their leaders in the run-up to the election? What is your reaction to that concern?
That concern is very valid, but our reaction has been, as always, that we are a peaceful political party. We need the police, the security organs, to make sure that this attack stops immediately, because this is an election year, and we have been suppressed for the last 5 years. They should not take this as an opportunity to continue suppressing us. Our people, we've been tired of holding them, that they should keep silent, they should respect. Our people now, they are seeing us as leaders, that we are not taking enough action. So the security organs, they have the responsibility of making sure that these attacks stops immediately.
The police have always said that they are there to enforce the law. They will protect life and property. And that, you know, a few incidents here and there, it's not a true reflection of the concerns being expressed by supporters of the opposition, and that they are doing everything possible to investigate incidents of attacks and violence to bring the perpetrators to book. Your reaction to that?
That has been always the sentiment from the police. And what I can tell you for sure is that if police won't take action, and they have started this afternoon, as we are speaking right now, one of our candidates in Mbeya region, a very popular one, in the name of Joseph Mbilinyi or Sugu, is a very popular candidate. He was arrested a few minutes ago by the police in Mbeya while he was going to the municipal to collect his nomination forms. He was arrested by the police. And Mbeya right now is in chaos because of this act of the police. So the police always, they do say that they are doing investigation, they will protect everybody. We haven't seen them protecting us.
John Mrema is Chadema's Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Still in Tanzania, the Electoral Commission has dismissed fears that opposition leaders will be barred from the upcoming general election. Supporters of the opposition say it appears the electoral body plans to prevent leading opposition presidential candidates from participating in the October polls. This, they contend, will ensure incumbent President John Magufuli is re-elected. But Dr. Wilson Charles, the director of elections at the Tanzania National Electoral Commission, or NEC, rejects the accusations. He says there are no plans to prevent anyone from participating in the polls. He tells me that all the candidates will be treated fairly and equally during the election process.
What they are telling you is not true, because those are just suppositions, just thinking that they'll be prevented. The National Electoral Commission is working based on the Constitution of the National Republic of Tanzania, but also like the National Election Act, and so CAP 343 and the CAP 292. So we are just working based on the Constitution and on the laws, existing laws. So those are just presuppositions, but you have also got qualification for one to be nominated to be the presidential in our candidate. So if they have qualifications, they will be nominated. So how can they say in advance that they are not going to be nominated? Probably if they think they don't have the qualification, why did they come to take the form for nomination form? So we cannot wait based on the presupposition. We just wait and see. There is no such a thing. So just wasting time discussing things that are just the position. I can say that is an unfounded claim.
Is the Electoral Commission planning to meet all these political parties and other stakeholders to resolve any concerns they have before the election?
No, we have been regularly meeting with the various stakeholders, including those political parties, and actually have meetings to discuss and have common understanding and the way forward while conducting the general election. So there is no one who is teaching us to do that. That is our obligation, to make sure that we meet with the various stakeholders to also have a common understanding and run the election smoothly. Not only political parties, but we have got various stakeholders. So we are going to meet with them, but not to address that concern. We are meeting with them to address issues related to elections and how to have a common understanding, how to move, how to follow procedures, follow the rules and existing regulations that are in the country. So that's what I can say.
How are preparations so far in getting ready for the October elections?
The preparations are quite good. We are going on with our electoral processes, so we are moving on very well. So people have to get ready for election, for the general election in October as planned. From 5th August to 25th August, which is actually people taking nomination forms, and the nomination will take place in August 25th, and then 26th August to 27th August, it will be election campaign. And those political parties that will be having nominated candidates will have to obey the rules and the regulations and the ethics of elections that all registered political parties have signed.
What assurances is the Electoral Commission giving Tanzanians about the transparency and credibility of the upcoming election that the Electoral Commission will be organizing?
It has been transparent since when it was started in 1993. It has conducted the general elections in 1995, 2000, 2005, 2010, 2015. And now 2020. So we promise that we are going to conduct this election in a fair and a transparent way, using the existing rules, regulations, laws, and the Constitution of the United Republic of Tanzania, as it has been doing from before. And the people, all equal parties that are going to participate, will have equal opportunity to air out their party manifesto to the Tanzanians, and it is the Tanzanians who will be listening to the manifestos of various registered political parties, and then they have opportunity to go and vote for the leaders they want.
Dr. Wilson Charles is the Director of Elections at the Tanzania National Electoral Commission, or NEC. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam.
Join Encounter host Carol Castiel as two dynamic political experts, John Fortier and Jim Kessler, discuss the significance of Senator Kamala Harris as running mate for Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. The two also spar over the politics of the U.S. Postal Service and mail-in ballots in the run-up to the 2020 elections. Listen to Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Business Unity South Africa, or BUSA, an umbrella group representing nearly 90% of business organizations in the country, is calling on the government to crack down on corruption. The group warns that if it goes unchecked, the country could become a society with no moral compass where corruption and looting is the norm. This after President Cyril Ramaphosa expressed concern about corruption in the purchase of personal protective equipment to help in the fight to contain the spread of the coronavirus. Cass Kuvadia, Chief Executive Officer of BUSA, says South Africans must unite and fight corruption in all forms. He says an anti-graft agenda will not be complete without the removal of all forms of corruption across all sectors that facilitate bribes and criminal transactions. Cass Kuvadia tells me that BUSA will continue to demonstrate a commitment to zero tolerance for corruption among all of its members alleged to be engaged in acts of graft.
We've been calling for action against corruption and theft for a long time. What's happened during COVID is that even in the procurement of PPE, there have been some businesses and government officials who have colluded to corrupt and to essentially loot the country in the importing and production of PPE during this pandemic. And we are saying that even during a pandemic, when people are able to and do not have any sort of conscience to continue to looting even during a pandemic, it is unconscionable. It cannot be accepted. And we are asking government to take swift action against these people. And we are asking society to actually identify such people and call them out.
You were quoted as saying corruption kills. It kills nurses, doctors, commuters, and citizens relying on fake PPE. How so? Can you explain to me?
Well, if you're producing or importing PPE that's not up to standard and that does not meet the required standards, you are actually distributing masks and other equipment that could actually cause more harm than good. The issue is that we certainly in South Africa, unlike other places, including yours, unfortunately, we are quite clear and the government is quite clear that masks must be worn. Citizens must wear masks when they are outdoors. People who are working must wear masks and social distance and must sanitize. And if businesses in collusion with government officials are importing or producing substandard masks or sanitation, sanitizers and so on, it causes harm to both doctors and ordinary citizens. We also believe that where government officials are involved in corruption, it actually means that they are not conducting themselves in an ethical way in the normal business and normal responsibilities in government. That results in service delivery being compromised, and that results in the most vulnerable actually being at the butt end of such corruption.
Well, some South Africans say that government officials or their relatives are having businesses or contract with the local government or the national government undermines effort to weed out corruption in South Africa. In your calls for a swift action on corruption, what have these anti-graft organizations in South Africa done that you would say, okay, they are fighting the corruption that you warned could undermine the social fabric in South Africa?
Well, there are organizations like Corruption Watch, like business organizations like others that are calling out these acts of corruption and working with civil society to consistently call them out, to consistently reveal these events when they happen. The president has also appointed a special task force to uncover and swiftly act against those people responsible for corruption during the COVID pandemic in the production and distribution of PPE. And our national prosecuting authority now has been given additional resources to investigate and act against. And what we as a business organization are saying that we will identify any businesses that are involved in corruption. And if they are shown to have been guilty of involving corruption, we will call them out and we will ensure that they are not members of business organizations.
Now, you also warned that South Africa is in danger of becoming a country in which the society has lost its moral compass and corruption and looting becomes the norm. Are you teaming up with other business entities to put pressure on these anti-corruption agencies or organizations to go after the alleged perpetrators of graft in South Africa?
Yeah, so the business entity South Africa represents probably 95% of business. When BUSA stand up against us and they are putting pressure on government to act and ensuring that these things get called out and are publicized, we're actually doing that on behalf of 95% of business in South Africa.
Cas Kavodia is the Chief Executive Officer of Business Unity South Africa, or BUSA, an umbrella group representing nearly 90% of business organizations. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. Meanwhile, South Africa's efforts to reopen the economy are being frustrated by the re-emergence of electricity shortages. The reopening of more businesses has exerted pressure on power generating units, triggering plant breakdowns that have forced the state power utility Eskom to implement power cuts. But as Thusa Kumalo reports for VOA from Johannesburg, experts have warned that if something is not done, the shortages could finish off those businesses that survived COVID-19 lockdown.
The return of power cuts comes at a time when calls are getting louder for the government to fully reopen economic activity. The power cuts had disappeared when most businesses were forced to shut down during COVID-19 lockdown levels 5 and 4. But this week, the power cuts returned, with businesses and citizens spending hours without electricity across the country. The Council for Scientific and Industrial Research has warned the power shortages could continue for up to 3 years. Gerard Wright, principal engineer at the council, says it's time to fully implement the current energy policy that allows independent power producers to come aboard.
In that policy, we start to implement new build capacity, including solar and wind and some storage capacity, as well as some other technologies like gas and even new build coal that is part of the RP 2019 at the moment, and enable the system to then be less constrained, which enables lower levels of load shedding or hopefully no load shedding at all.
The country currently is under lockdown level 3. A lot of businesses already have shut their doors for good. Many that have opened have struggled to return to full capacity, forcing them to shed thousands of jobs. But with more calls now to move to lockdown level 2, to remove remaining restrictions and reopen prohibited sectors, energy expert Teddy Blom says the worst is yet to come.
This power shortage issue is yet to stay for at least until Eskom has refurbished its fleet, where they need to open up new coal mines to keep the coal flowing to the power stations. So if you ask me what's the current status, I'd say that the pantry is empty. So it's a recipe for disaster. I mean, if you drive your car around and you keep on throwing the wrong fuel in all the time, eventually it's going to break down and stop.
Energy analyst Chris Yeland says what makes the situation die is that Eskom has no financial capacity to steady energy supply.
You have to restructure Eskom, take the generation part out of Eskom, because all the debt is carried by generation. The transmission business could be made into an independent grid company. It's a perfectly good company. It's solvent. It's technically capable. It's working. So you need to unbundle this so that the transmission company can enter into power purchase agreements with new generators.
In March this year, before the COVID-19 lockdown, South Africa's unemployment rate already stood at 30.1%, representing 7.1 million unemployed job seekers. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The UN Food Programme warns at least 15.6 million people in the Democratic Republic of Congo are suffering from acute food shortages, sending malnutrition rates among children soaring to new heights. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
United Nations officials worry that the Democratic Republic of Congo might overtake Yemen as the biggest hunger emergency in the world. For now, the DRC remains in second place. However, the World Food Programme warns millions of Congolese are at risk of plunging deeper into hunger in the next 6 months if the international community does not support its humanitarian operation. The WFP says it needs $172 million to support short-term food requirements in Congo. WFP spokeswoman Elizabeth Beers tells VOA her agency plans to provide food assistance this year to 8.6 million people suffering from extreme hunger, an increase of nearly 2 million over the record number of famished people it assisted in 2019.
If we do not get adequate funding, we will have to reduce our operation, cut food ration, and reduce the number of people we assist. This is a very worrying situation.
Among those most at risk are people in the conflict-ravaged eastern provinces of Ituri, North and South Kivu and Tanganyika, as well as the central Kasai region. The WFP reports about 40% of the people in the provinces are approaching starvation levels. Children, of course, are particularly vulnerable. The UN Children's Fund reports 3.4 million children in the DRC are acutely malnourished and 42.7% are stunted, the highest under five-year-old rate in southern Africa. Beers says conflict and inter-ethnic violence in eastern DRC has forced more than a million civilians to flee their homes this year. She says that has aggravated an already complex displacement and hunger crisis.
We are also concerned about the IDPs, 5 million of IDPs, because 90% of them are women and children, and they live in crowded settlements in urban areas with poor sanitation and poor health care. And they are now at risk, greater risk, because of COVID-19.
The World Health Organization reports more than 9,500 cases of coronavirus in the DRC, including 225 deaths. UN agencies fear the number is likely to increase as people in the cramped IDP sites are unable to practice physical distancing and good hygiene because their access to clean water is limited. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Mapenzi yamezaliwa bombe masongi kwenye majani aye utaweza mwana wa monde amemshinda shambani aye akiza nyama na pombe atulewe twende chumbani aye nikupe mwogo wa jangombe kisiginu kiwe begani baby ule ni msiwezaji kuzunguka
one night is ten
yani nipe nikupe kabla
one night is dead.
Kunde boy, squeeze kupenda penda, kumepitwa na
nidanganye umemkamata mtoto wa mujini magoli mengi samata hata uzame chumvi ila kuna wazee wa migodi awagonga gihodi ujifanye mjanja unachunga ila ndo wanalipa kodi atadanganya na enda jogging kumbe yuko loji kwanza kona jaza mimba uko jimu na jaza bodi. What I believe, no money, no law. You pull on paga moyo, akaugawa vipande. Nimeumbwa na wivu, nina wivu, moyo wangu sambo. Hakuwaga mchoyo, kutu miguru pande. Kwanza mapenzi amezaliwa bombe, masongi kwenye majani. Utaweza mwana wa mbonde, amemshinda sharukani. Sio unakunywa tuma pombe, unajua nilipa nani. Twende kakupe kula ngombe, ukaugulie nyumbani. Baby all I need, misuzaji kuzunguka.
One night to stand. Yani nipe nikupe, kabla kuja pambazuka.
so insecure. She don't make love with the lights on. So insecure. She don't wanna talk about it, no. And I'm so insecure. One day she leaves me and she find another guy who make her happier than I.
I'm so insecure. I'm never telling you about it. Yeah. Ooh, and I swim on a t-shirt. And you never leave your house with no makeup on. But let's not talk about it. And burn, hope we see the light. Sister Angea.
kuza konze kanzi jani sinde kulabe kukatono ngende jie. Oh baby I got to go
oluti kolulolo mese nempe woya komo seto neka kuwa wanonsiao abankwana bateo na yeze na
Chejo
Zeleva no ma
Emirimu anti jeminji
Uri chisera Bankulinze Oba Vize Soka Otuse Atera ogenda
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, before you destroy a bridge, make sure you can swim. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.